I had originally indicated we had three matters on our oral calendar today. I was mistaken. We have two matters on our oral calendar today and three for non-oral. Our next case and final case on for our oral argument calendar is MFK, by and through her parent, and versus the school district, Walker, Hackensack, Akeley, ISD 113. Council, each of you will have 15 minutes to present your argument with an additional 5 minutes to appellant's counsel if you'd like to use that time. There is a button in front of the lectern that lets you raise and lower it to match your height at your the timing restrictions are indicated in the clock and the light in your podium, so please be mindful of it. And please do state your name as you commence each leg of your argument because we keep an audio recording for the bit. Counsel for appellant.
Good morning, Your Honors. Jason Stoffel, STOFFEL, for Walker, Hackensack, Akeley, ISD 113. We're here today on what I believe is a pretty straightforward application of an official immunity case. I'm sure Your Honors are very well read on the facts, but I'll just touch on the high points, and you know, I'm very eager to have a discussion and answer all your questions. But to start with the facts.
Actually, Counsel, we are familiar with the facts and the record. So I if you don't mind, I would like to go just right to the questions.
By all means.
You mentioned that this is fairly straightforward, but I think this area is clear as mud in terms of official immunity based on case law and cases even going back to the 70s talking about how unclear this area is. But feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. It sounds to me like you are, we first have to identify the governmental conduct that is at issue here.
Correct.
And it seems that you are framing the issue as the level of supervision that was appropriate for the activities here, including the batting station.
Correct. The nature of, well, it turns on, you identify the conduct of the government, and then you need to characterize it. What is the duty being applied here? Is the duty ministerial, or is it discretionary, right? And to look at this, you look at, you know, what the activity is, supervising the softball practice. And to, I mean, since we're cutting right to the chase, I do believe it's straightforward. And for what it's worth, I do believe some of the cases from the 70s, 80s, and even perhaps the 90s discuss, they find this confusing. But I would point the court to the extent it's useful. It's the 2004 Anderson versus Anoka-Hennepin case that discusses some of this. I think the Sletten case does it as well, where they say, you know, going forward, we're not going to be confusing official immunity with statutory immunity, and statutory immunity applies to policy-making functions, and official immunity applies to the day-to-day functions.
And you're referring, is that the case that calls into question Larson as to
correct.
Potentially...
Correct, exactly. Larson was one of the confused cases, and Anderson is the one that points it out. But to then draw it back into this case, I mean, we're talking about the supervision of children here, and we're talking about the supervision of school-age children. We're talking about a volunteer activity. You've got volunteer coaches from the community coming in, and everybody who has children knows that, I mean, you can tell them to do one thing, especially when you've got a group of them, and, you know, they understand the activity, they, you know, some of them better than others, and at every given moment, you the coach, the parent, the supervisor, whatever it may be, has to kind of assess the dynamic situation.
Can we go back to the specific conduct? I think that was the question. So the district court said that your client was framing the issue as the conduct that's being considered for either being official or ministerial as the manner in which practices are conducted. And the district court framed the issue as the decision not to directly supervise 9-year-old girls who were engaging in batting practice. Did the district court accurately characterize the issue that has to be decided as either characterize as either discretionary or ministerial.
I don't believe that's an accurate characterization.
You don't believe it's inaccurate or
no,
accurate?
No, I don't believe it is accurate.
So, okay, what's wrong with the district court's characterization?
Well, you can start with the premise that having supervision was required. There's a practice there. You can't say, all right, 10-year-old kids, you know, start doing these activities, I'm going to the gas station, right? You need to coach there. But once you've got the supervision in place, how that supervision is conducted, that's where the discretion lies. And the plaintiff or the...
Right, but you would agree, wouldn't you, that if the... in this case, is it Ms. Land? Am I pronouncing that right?
Coach Lant, I believe.
Coach Lant. If she were required as a matter of a ministerial duty to directly supervise or to make sure that another coach was directly supervising the girls who were engaging in batting practice, that then would be a ministerial duty.
Well,
and that official immunity wouldn't.
Right, and that's where I was headed. So to have somebody there supervising will be ministerial. But inside of the duty to supervise, there's a lot of discretion. So I don't think there's any argument that there wasn't a coach there, that there wasn't a coach nearby. The question is, inside of that area, there's a lot of discretion. Now, where's a coach? I mean, your eyes can only focus on one thing. You've got two coaches. I don't think there's any dispute that there was a problem there. It's that the activity was being characterized as Coach Lant or the other coach weren't directly supervising. But what's the definition of directly supervising? That's where the discretion lies.
So you agree then. Okay, so it sounds like you're agreeing that the district court's framing was correct, but the conclusion was wrong. That the district court, by saying, look, the question is whether there's a duty to directly supervise a 9-year-old girl's engaging in batting practice, and I guess your argument is the requirement, ministerial duty is you've got to supervise. I mean, you've got to be there. But whether it's direct or indirect, how close you have to be, those are matters of discretion.
All of those within the duty to be there and to supervise. Okay. That's where the discretion lies.
All right, so it doesn't sound like you're in disagreement with the district court's framing. It's just
well, I disagree where the district court seemed to allude the fact that there was no direct supervision. I think you can be directly supervising, say you got some kids here to your right and some kids here to your left. Your eyes might be on the kids to the left, but it doesn't mean you're not directly supervising the kids to the right. Or there's dispute in this case as to, you know, Coach Lant or the other coach perhaps were too far from the batting station. But that's a quintessential example of discretion. Should, you know, the coach have determined I should be 15 feet away from the batting station versus 20 feet away versus, you know, 30 feet away? And if I could, you know, jog there or run there within a matter of seconds, who's to say that was too far away? These are all in-the-moment judgment calls that these coaches have to make based on the age of the players, the ability of the players, you know, their experience with those players, the nature of the activities, right? These are all in-the-moment factors that a coach is taking into account at every moment of the practice. And the fact that the coach is taking into these account in a dynamic setting at every moment and reassessing what should I do, where should I direct my attention, you know, what should I be focused on, that demonstrates the discretion in this case as opposed to the ministerial duty. You know, if we go back to the definition in the case law, you know, it's just the black letter law. Discretionary duties utilize professional judgment reflecting professional goals and the factors of the situation. And I think all the factors I just described, you know, are examples of all the factors of the situation in this case.
Whereas and to that point, and just to clarify, it sounds like you're saying, and you're in agreement with the general proposition that the duty to supervise, that is ministerial. But underneath that, what I'm hearing you say is the level of supervision, taking into account all the factors that you've listed, that's where it becomes discretionary.
Correct.
Okay. Now, what case law can you cite to support that proposition that the level of supervision or how the children are supervised is discretionary?
There are a couple cases, and this point isn't argued specifically in our briefs, but off the top of my head, Olson versus Ramsey County comes to mind. Where there's, you know, there can be an interplay between discretionary and ministerial duties. In that case, a child was harmed, and the court and the lawsuit was against the county employees who were required to make a case plan for a neglected child. And the conclusion in that case was, well, there's wide discretion as to how the plan was formulated. That's the day in, day out, the judgment calls of the professional government employee. But once the plan's in place, it can establish ministerial duties. So that's kind of flipped the other way around, but there'll always be an interplay. I mean, I had a duty to be here today, but you know, how I answer your questions and how I formulate my arguments, you know, that's all within my discretion. So, I mean, I think there are cases where we could find that interplay. I think common sense gets us there as well.
Does age of the child bear on the, obviously bears on the nature of the duty, but aside from that, does it bear upon the issue of whether certain degree of supervision is ministerial or not? If these are high school kids versus, let's say, there were 5-year-old kids with baseball bats, I mean, is there some, does it change the question of what's discretionary and what's not?
I don't think it does. I, you know, you have similar, you've got 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds playing t-ball. I've got a 3-year-old kid, and we just signed him up for soccer this summer. You know, I'd reference, you know, using that as an example. I know when I bring my 3-year-old kid to the city park and watch him do his soccer activity, there's going to be a number of children and a number of coaches, and I'll be free to stay there and watch, or I may be free to walk down the street to the coffee shop, having entrusted my kid to the coach of the 3-year-olds. Now, let's take it into another context. My kid also goes to daycare, and I've cited in the briefing just examples of explaining the difference between these ministerial and discretionary duties. There are absolute, fixed, and certain regulations as applied to daycares. In an infant room at a daycare facility, you need to have 4 adults for every 1 infant, and you can have up to 8 infants. And if you have 8, or if you have 5, 6, 7, or 8 infants, you need 2 adults. And other than that, like, that's the universe of possibilities per the regulations. There's no wondering, you know, if I leave my kid here, is it, could I go to the coffee shop? I mean, these regulations are in place to satisfy parents and to satisfy satisfy concerns of safety. Is a different example as to, you know, as kids get older, school-age kids, as in this case, I've also cited in my brief, the standard that applies to school-age children in in-home daycare, you know, somebody having a daycare in their house. And for in-home daycare, the standard is of supervision, quote, being available for assistance in care, end quote.
You agree that the law, I mean, I don't know if it's as fuzzy as our cases have said, but we have had cases that have suggested that this is a difficult area and hard to discern. Assume that we agree with you and we issue a published opinion. What is the rule of law that will help future courts and district courts to discern the differences between discretionary and non-discretionary supervision?
Well, I think, you know, I think we've both agreed, responded in my briefing, that it is very much case by case. But as I think about these cases, and, you know, I've handled a number of them over the years, I always think if there's a ministerial duty, there shouldn't be a long back and forth. That's why we're here today. But it makes it easy to think, if you're wondering, is it here? Is it there? Where does it begin? Where does it end? What about 3-year-olds? What about high school students? If you're having all of this discussion, whether internally or, you know, in the courtroom, it's kind of an indication that this isn't ministerial.
So what would be the rule of law that would help us to make this case the one that lawyers and judges will look to and say, okay, here's at least in one area of law, one type of circumstance, here's something we can say is a line that's drawn. What's the rule?
Well, I think if you've got these, like the daycare regulations, I mean, if you've got a statute, a regulation, perhaps, you know, to be, there are sporting leagues where, you know, if you're connected to USA Gymnastics.
I haven't heard a rule yet. What's the rule?
If you can cite to a industry accepted standard, if you can cite to a statute, if you can cite to a regulation.
Well, that's already the law. I'm trying to get, in this particular case, what is the nuance law or rule that will help guide future litigants? Maybe there's not one.
Well, that's why I started off by saying I believe this is a straightforward case. I think all those examples would be examples of ministerial duties. None of those are met here, and therefore we're in the world of discretion.
Are you saying, and just to kind of complete your thought, because I want to make sure I'm clear as to where you're going, is your rule law is if there's a statute of regulation or an industry accepted standard that defines ministerial?
I should speak carefully. There is nuance, and it's in the brief about industry standards. You know, I'm speaking just off the cuff, answering your questions. But certainly a statute or a regulation. The case law have examples.
But you wouldn't say those are the only non-discretionary acts that are not within official immunity.
There are other circumstances where there would be an absolute, certain, and imperative duty. And for example, like some of these cases arise, there's a number of these that arise from shop class where a kid cuts themselves on a saw. And so a ministerial duty could come from a school policy saying in shop class, you need to demonstrate the saw, test the kids on how to use the saw, watch the kids use the saw at least once or twice, and then you can turn them loose to use the saw. That's not a statute or a regulation, but it's a, you know, hard and fast school policy that you can point to.
Thank you. Your time has expired. You'll have another 5 minutes to keep the action going. Counsel for respondent.
Excuse me. Thank you, Your Honors. Thank you, Counsel. I'm Charles Sagert, attorney for respondent. And I'll, to the point that this is a difficult issue, I'll just make an attempt to answer your question, Your Honor. What helped me see a pattern amongst these cases, and the difficulty here is how can the duty of supervising children and maybe a small group of children or a couple of children in a batting drill, how can that be an absolute, certain, and imperative duty arising from fixed and designated facts that makes it a ministerial duty?
Well, hold on. When you say supervising a couple of kids in a, you know, batting, as I understand it, this was a full practice. So there was a team of kids, as I understand it, and a couple of coaches. So it wouldn't just be what you do to supervise in batting practice, it would be how do you supervise the whole, when you only have two coaches, what do you do in your supervision? Are you required to have someone there at the batting station? I think is probably a better way to frame it, unless you think I'm wrong.
Frame the duty?
Right, well, you were suggesting that, I mean, I think it might be more clear if this was, maybe not, if this was a, all right, we're gonna have practice, we're gonna have a couple of kids here, and one coach assigned, and all we're going to do is batting practice. And two kids only are at practice. I mean, that would seem to be different in nature from we have a full practice, part of which includes throwing, catching, fielding, positions, rules, batting, and we've got two coaches assigned. Do you agree or disagree that changes the dynamic?
I'm not sure I understand. I think supervision of the whole practice, this is about a dozen kids, I think that's a ministerial duty to do that.
What's a ministerial duty to?
To supervise those kids.
Duty to supervise, that's a duty, okay.
Well, so again, more specific to supervise as an individual drill. I mean, those coaches had a duty to supervise all of the kids in practice in general, and also to supervise the kids doing the drill. And And I think the applicable cases show that even the coach's duty to supervise the group was ministerial. Well, that's what they
ask this. Let's assume for a moment that the child who is injured is injured by a thrown ball. Let's say there are two drills. One is batting, or let's say four drills. One is batting, one is fielding, I guess three drills. One is batting, one is fielding, one is catching out in the outfield. And the coaches are working with two of these, and they're saying, okay, the fielders, you go out there and just play catch. And one of the kids turns his head and gets hit in the back of the head. Is that a ministerial duty, or is that a discretionary duty to supervise?
It's ministerial, and it is case by case, and I can explain why. That's basically what happened here, you know. And it may be that the coaches shouldn't have had a third drill because
but
they didn't.
Is that discretionary, whether they have a two or three drills?
I mean, that is an exercise of discretion, but that doesn't mean their duty was a discretionary duty. That's how they carried out their ministerial duty. And as some cases say, there can be a level of discretion or judgment. That doesn't make it a ministerial duty. We're getting into
how what you're saying, though. So if you had fielding practice where you're catching fly balls, and you've got batting practice, and you've got basic fielding, throwing and catching practice over on the side, you would say if you've got two coaches of nine-year-olds, you have no discretion to have multiple drills going on at the same time. Otherwise, you automatically would be violating your duty.
No.
Because there's no direct supervision.
No, I wouldn't say that. I would say that I'm reluctant to say this, but I wouldn't even necessarily say, as appellant suggests, that we're arguing that that the duty was to directly supervise.
What was the duty?
The duty was to supervise those kids.
What does that mean?
Well, how they do so is the question of negligence. It's the question of how they carried out the duty.
Isn't the how the discretionary part? It sounds like you're conflating the negligence with the whether the duty is ministerial or discretionary. And let's assume for the sake of argument, I agree with you that the duty to supervise is ministerial. Watch the kids. But isn't how it is implemented, isn't that where it becomes discretionary?
Well, the duty has to be either ministerial or discretionary.
Well, there can be different levels, though. Like, as appellant noted in Olson, while it was reversed, the court there did talk about what duties are ministerial and which ones are discretionary. And the how is where the court said that's when discretion comes into play.
I would disagree. The how is, you have to answer four questions before you get to how. The who, what, when, and where. And when you have specifics for all of those four, then the how, then the question becomes whether the how is protected by immunity. So in Olson.
Well, is that when you talk about it was a specific place, specific number of people, specific?
Yes.
That where is that in the case law? That seems to be a narrowing that I didn't see in the case law that I reviewed.
I think that's the rule that we should use.
If that's the rule we should use, is that founded in the case law? Because I think the case law is different in terms of the starting point is identifying the actual governmental conduct that is at issue.
You're saying that's the rule we should announce in this case?
Yeah, and I can explain. The what are they doing? That's part of the fixed and fixed and definite facts giving rise. So you do look at what's going on, and that tells you whether the duty is ministerial or discretionary.
That doesn't tell you. That's a second step. Then you look at it to determine whether or not it is discretionary or ministerial. But that first step doesn't define it by itself. So, for example, here, like I said, let's assume that I agree with you that providing supervision is ministerial. You need to watch the children, okay? But underneath that, isn't there a level of supervision and discretion in terms of how the children are supervised that becomes discretionary? And let me, when I look at, for example, the affidavit, it talks about, and Lon's affidavit, she talks about when coaching multiple players, so we've got a dozen kids here, you can properly supervise them by not having eyes on every player at every moment. That seems to make sense. I don't know how anybody can watch 12 children at one time. She talked about how practice sessions, stations are set up, and here they had two. They set it up so that all the children could be observed with a turn of the head. She also talked about the placement of the coaches so they could see all of them, the age of the children, the ability of the children, and that all constituted discretion. Why is that not part of the discretion that in terms of level of supervision?
Because the duty is based on established public policy.
What is established public policy here?
That if these are the adults, in charge of these kids, they are responsible for supervising the kids.
Yes, that's the overarching. What I'm talking about is the level below that. You need to supervise them. You need to make sure that the children are safe. Okay? But how do you do that?
I'm not suggesting that all supervision of children is ministerial. That's why if you have specifics with regard to who to whom the duty is owed, what the activity is, where they are, and when you have fixed and designated facts, so the duty to supervise children is absolute, certain, and imperative. When you have fixed and designated facts, those combined.
What are the fixed and designated facts? Because the coach decided how many children to have playing in the outfield and how many children to have in the batting practice, where they are standing to supervise them, how they would rotate through, what their age was, what their ability was. How is that fixed? That sounds like it's kind of up to the coaches.
She exercised discretion, but she can't make policy in her mind and then say, well, I decided to do this, and that's an established policy. I mean, that's what she decided to do, but we think that was negligent. There's always...
I'm talking about whether or not she exercised discretion. I want to go to your affidavit, and I found it interesting that I thought that affidavit was filed in opposition to the summary judgment motion, but in your brief, you seem to pull back from that, the affidavit from the expert.
So the Raleigh case and the Sheehan case make clear that teachers and school staff, you know, in the class that they are teaching at that time or the team or whatever it is, they have a general duty to, school staff have a duty to exercise ordinary care to prevent sudden foreseeable misconduct which probably could have been prevented by the exercise of ordinary care. Sheehan, the duty is that it arises if the general danger was foreseeable, not the specific incident. So I don't think I need an expert to establish that these coaches had a duty to supervise these kids.
So what is it? Did the district court correctly or incorrectly define the issue that is under consideration, the actual duty here? And that was the district court framed it as the decision not to directly supervise 9-year-old girls who were engaging in batting practice. Is that an accurate description of the issue that the district court was deciding and the one that we're deciding?
Really, no. That's how the coaches carried out their duty. What we're deciding
is... So what's the proper thing then? If the district court was wrong about that, first of all, if the district court was wrong about that, why wouldn't we remand it for the district court to make a proper assessment? And if the district court was... what is the correct thing that the district court should be deciding is the duty that we're addressing?
The issue which makes this makes immunity applicable or not is whether the duty that the coaches had was ministerial or discretionary.
And no, I understand that, but the district court framed the conduct that's at issue to be what I just described, mm-hmm. which was the decision not to directly supervise. So is that accurate or not accurate? Is that what we should be focusing on, the decision not to directly supervise, or is there something else?
Well, the conduct is how she chose to supervise, and that is what that is a factor in figuring out what the duty was, what was going on, what was she doing. She didn't directly supervise the drill.
Well, what was the, okay, so the district court is correct that she didn't directly supervise it. I'm trying to understand what you're asserting is the ministerial duty. The district court focused on the ministerial duty as the requirement to directly supervise 9-year-old girls in batting practice. And you're saying the district court was wrong about that. If the district court was wrong, what was the ministerial duty that was breached here that causes the official immunity not to apply?
The ministerial duty was to supervise a specific group of kids at a specific place at a specific time, and they were doing a specific activity. We have all four specifics there. I think the district court...
So what was the duty then? Was the because there was supervision. The district court just said it wasn't directly supervision. You're saying, so what was required of the coach? What specific thing was required that wasn't done?
To more closely supervise. We think that the way...
So the district court was right. The district court used the term directly, and you would say more closely is the requirement.
Yeah, yeah. And again, that's the issue of negligence.
How closely? How do we define the ministerial act that was breached? How closely must the coach have supervised under the ministerial duty?
That's a question for the jury. Once we have a ministerial duty...
What is the ministerial duty?
To supervise this group of kids. And I think the district court got into a little bit about how the duty's carried out. But, I mean, we have many...
That's what you're arguing. Saying it should be more closely. So isn't that how the duty is carried out?
Yes, but we're not here to talk about how the duty is carried out. We're here to talk about what is the duty or what type of duty is it?
But we do have to talk about the duty. In order to determine whether or not it's a ministerial duty, we have to determine whether it's absolute, certain, and imperative. And you're saying they should have been watched more closely. How do we know that that's absolute, certain, and imperative? Usually it's by some type of policy or guidelines or some type of, it could be a statute, a handbook of some kind for coaches. What makes the fact that they breached their duty, which is what you're trying to get to, but that duty is ministerial because it is absolute, certain, and imperative that they weren't close enough?
A ministerial duty is either the implementation or exercise of an established public policy or the application of specific written guidelines.
Okay, what are the specific written guidelines that says they were too far away, they weren't close enough?
There are none.
Okay, then how can it be a ministerial duty that they weren't close enough?
It's the first part of that quote from SW v. Spring Lake Park. A ministerial act is either the implementation or exercise of an established public policy. It's an established public policy that the coaches have to supervise these kids.
How is that tied to them not being close enough to them, though?
The proximity to the drill, I think, is a step beyond here. I'm suggesting that the duty to supervise the kids, like the teacher in Anderson, like the gym teacher in Larson, like the case... child protection worker in Olson, like the teacher, time and time again, the teachers have it's a ministerial duty to supervise that class. In S&W, the potential intruder in the school, the court said, was drawing the teachers away from their ministerial acts. The janitor's ministerial acts were to perform cleaning and maintenance, not security, and watch out for. So it's hard. What's difficult is that a ministerial duty, the rules say it has to be, you know, it seems like it has to be very small, but it can be broad if there are these specifics, specific facts giving rise to it. Well, I'm sorry.
We've kept you beyond your time, and I think you've thoroughly answered the question, so thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Counsel for appellant, you have 5 minutes of rebuttal.
Okay. I'd like to take this time to address this interesting question that I've reflected a little bit more on. You talk about the levels, whether there could be a ministerial level, and below that, discretion once you get past that. And having given it just a little bit more thought, I think there's a better way to think about it. You have a duty to supervise the children. I mean, we can establish that. I don't think... Then you say the duty is ministerial with some discretion below it. In fact, I think the answer is you have a duty to supervise, period, right? Now we ask, that duty to supervise, is it a ministerial duty or is it a discretionary duty? Now in the example where you have a duty to supervise and you breach that duty by, as I said earlier, you leave the kids and go to the gas station to buy a pop or something. So one of the exceptions to official immunity is if you have a discretionary duty, but you breach it willfully or maliciously. So even though the duty itself was discretionary, you don't get absolute immunity for willful or malicious breaches of it. And then that takes us out of the, levels analysis, and I actually think that's the more appropriate.
Well, then, okay, let's add this, change the facts a little bit. Ms. Lund shows up with her assistant coach. We've got a duty to supervise. She tells the kids, we're going to have batting practice, we're going to have fielding practice, and then Ms. Lund and her assistant take out a lawn chair, and they sit on the sidelines, and they tell the kids, go to it. And they sit in their lawn chair, and they're observing, and that's it.
Okay.
Is that it?
I think
at some point.
Well, I'm sure deposition testimony would bear out a few more facts, like why were you just sitting there? What did you have going on? What was in your mind? Why were you just sitting there?
It's just the way we supervise, We like the way we supervise this way. We kind of can see the whole field from here, and we're on first base, and the batting is over behind the.
Okay,
the
with plate. That record, I think the answer is. They didn't willfully or maliciously abandon their duty, and you may believe the way they executed the duty was negligent. I may very well believe it, but they're entitled to immunity because they used poor discretion, and that's the premise of immunity. So I believe that's the answer to the question.
So the willful would be, for example, if they decide they're going to run to the local coffee shop and grab a cup of cappuccino after they've let the kids run around, and they come back half an hour later and realize somebody got bonked on the head.
I'm sorry, I missed the first few words of the question.
Oh, just that. So let's assume that they actually, said, okay, everyone, go out, here's what you need to do. Go out and practice. We're going to be back in half an hour. We're going to go get coffee. That would be going more into the realm of willful then? Is that kind of where you're going?
Okay. Yep, if you just abandon your duty.
To supervise,
you've willfully breached the duty. It's a discretionary duty. It's a duty. You have the duty, right? And I bring that up to answer the level.
Well, that would be a ministerial duty, though, not a discretionary duty. To supervise.
No, it's you have a duty to supervise.
Ministerial duty.
No, because how you supervise isn't fixed, absolute, and certain. You have a...
No, but it's fixed, absolute, and certain that you must supervise. So that's ministerial. You're saying what's discretionary is how you supervise. No,
the words ministerial or discretionary go to the characterization of the duty.
Right.
So you have the duty. You have the duty to supervise. So now we go into, is it a discretionary duty? Or is it, so if you breach...
Right. So how do you differentiate between a ministerial and discretionary when you get to that second stage?
So, okay, you have the duty to supervise. And this is where we ended up my first round of questioning. If you can point to the regulation, the statute, the protocol, that says there's one and only one way to do this, there's one and only one way to supervise, then we might have a ministerial duty, like the daycare regulations. When you've got 12 kids, you know, of this age, this experience, the coaches have this much familiarity with them, you've got, you know, kids doing different things, you know, when there's just no regulation, statute, or protocol to point to, then it's discretionary, because you need to use your professional judgment to determine, you know, how to fulfill the professional goals of the situation. So just because, I mean, you have a duty, right? But the existence of the duty in and of itself doesn't, that would otherwise turn all duties ministerial. So I think if you give that, I'm, you know, out of time here, but if you give that some consideration, I think that really helps answer the question, and it also speaks to what you were asking me earlier. What's the point of law that we're talking about here? And I think that speaks to that as well.
Thank you. Thank you to both counsel for your briefing, for your oral argument. The matter is submitted. We will issue our opinion within the statutory period. That is the last oral case on our calendar today, so the court is in recess. Thank you.
Thanks.
All rise.